Dr. Ron Sider is a professor of theology and public policy at Palmer Theological Seminary in Pennsylvania. He's been a relentless advocate for the poor and for decades has been urging American Christians to take seriously their own faith's concern for the less fortunate. His 1977 publication, Rich Christians in an Age of Hunger, has been called one of the most influential books of the 20th century. And he has continued to write prolifically on the subject of poverty and ways of relieving the suffering and enhancing the lives of the poor. He has been controversial at times, and we're very glad to have him into CPX to discuss his life's work. Ron Sider, welcome to Australia.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Great to have you here. There's a perception that Christianity in the West is divided between those who are most interested in issues of personal morality and those who are more interested in things like justice and care for the poor. Where does historic Christianity sit in that dichotomy?
Well, I would say that historic Christianity has had a more biblically balanced agenda than more recent one-sidedness. Historically, Christians have been very concerned about the poor. They've started hospitals, Sunday schools, for goodness sake, started out as schools for very poor kids who were working six days a week, and they had Sunday off, and so they taught them reading and arithmetic.
So it's quite a recent phenomenon, is it, this dichotomy?
In many ways, it is. In the 19th century, evangelical Christians in the U.S. were very engaged on slavery and a variety of economic justice issues, but we lost that at the early part of the 20th century and only slowly recovering it.
I've heard you talk about the emergence in recent times of an evangelical center, so more concern for things like creation care, justice issues. Is that the sense you're getting?
That's clearly the case. In the 1980s and 90s and into the first decade of this century, there was a very strong religious right in the U.S. It certainly didn't speak for all evangelical Christians, but it was very vocal and very loud and very well organized. And it was primarily focused on the issues of abortion and sanctity of human life and marriage and sexuality issues. The new evangelical Christian center has a much broader agenda. It's concerned about sanctity of human life, but also racial justice, the family, and also environmental protection, peacemaking, and economic justice for the poor. So that's where the evangelical center is going. That's strong. I would say emerging movement and quite exciting.
Yeah, so you're excited by that. You think this is a really positive change.
Well, my comment is to say if you claim to be a Christian and you want to get involved politically, then you ought to ask the question, what does the Bible tell us God cares about? And it's perfectly clear if you read the Bible that God cares more than about just abortion and euthanasia and marriage and sexuality issues. He cares about the poor and racial justice and peacemaking and care for creation. And so if you're going to be a Christian in politics, you ought to have a biblically balanced agenda.
Now, you've been criticized by defenders of the free market as a socialist, clinging to outdated economic policies and so on.
Even Marxist,
right. How do you respond to those critics? And has the global financial crisis, has that been a sense of a vindication for you or not?
Well, one way I respond is to say, I grew up as a farmer. Did you ever meet a farmer who wanted the government to own his land? I've never been a Marxist or a socialist in the sense that I want the government to own the bulk of the means of production. I think that it's perfectly clear from the experiment with communism in the 20th century that when you combine economic and political power, as you do when the government owns everything, then you almost guarantee totalitarianism. I'm very concerned to decentralize power, and I think that a market economy, private ownership, tends to do that. I also think that if you simply look at the history of the last 50 years, it's clear that the major reason that there's been a dramatic drop in the number of people in poverty in our world, and that has happened in 1970, about 35% of all the people in developing countries were chronically malnourished. Now it's about 18%. Now most of that has happened in Asia, and it's happened because of market economies in China and Indonesia and the tigers and all of that. I think that's just economic facts. But, you know, that's only half of what needs to be said. The other half is that it's perfectly clear that today's global economy is quite unjust. There's enormous poverty, global trade patterns have clearly been set up by powerful Western nations to benefit us. So there's injustice there that needs to be corrected. But I think that if the question is a market economy or a communist, state-owned, centrally planned economy a better framework for human thriving, I think the question is, at least the answer to me is clear, that a market economy is the place to start. But then you have to ask, what do you do to make it more just?
Has it been personally hurtful for you, some of the criticisms of your work?
Not really. Very occasionally, somebody I respected said things that I thought were very unfair. I guess I'm a little tough-skinned. I've actually been picketed here in Australia, in Brisbane, on one of my earlier trips, by people who thought that I was proposing Marxist ideas and heretical biblical ideas. But it hasn't bothered me much, no.
What do you think the church-state relationship ought to look like?
Well, my ancestors were actually killed by the thousands in the 16th century by Anglicans and Lutherans and Catholics and almost everybody, Calvinists. So I take religious freedom and the separation of church and state very, very seriously. I want everybody in society, whether they're Muslims or Methodists or Buddhists or Baptists or atheists, to have genuine religious freedom and to have the full rights of citizenship, regardless of what their religious beliefs are. Now, sometimes you get a secular kind of culture taking over where what they're really promoting is not genuine religious freedom and encouragement for everybody to speak out and share their religious views, but really a desire for a banishment of religious talk from public life. That's really not genuine religious freedom. That's a kind of secular dogmatism that I think is just unfair and really contrary to the basic principles that all the Western democracies share on religious freedom.
Are you able to give a sense of how much government intervention is required for economic justice? You spoke earlier about some elements of the free market being unjust. So, you know, are you able to give a sense of how much is the right amount?
There's no, you know, nice formula for deciding that. I think it's the case, obviously it's the case, that the debate over between Marxism and market economies has been won by market economy, and almost every country now wants to work within that framework. What's really at issue and genuinely debated is what kind of government intervention within a basic market framework and how much is good and what's counterproductive. And I don't think there's any kind of abstract approach that provides a norm. I think you have to, well, there are some general principles. One is that from a Christian framework, justice for the poor is one of the overriding values. I think God measures societies by what we do to the people at the bottom. And so it's proper for government to be engaged in promoting economic empowerment, promoting justice for the people on the bottom. Another principle, I think, is that centralized power is always dangerous. I don't want an unlimited state. I want the state to be limited. But I also want huge private economic corporations to be limited. You know, what we have now in both Australia and the United States is that we have exceedingly powerful and wealthy economic interests that control the media and provide most of the donations for the political campaigns. And so we've got centralized power again, with that economic and political power centralized. Conservatives used to be concerned about that when it was the Soviet Union, and they were right. Centralized power is dangerous, but somehow they seem to have forgotten when it comes to big corporations that can spend a few million dollars and get rid of a prime minister because he wants to tax them.
Is there a country in the world, in the West, that you think is getting the balance right?
I don't think anybody's getting the balance perfectly by any means. I think that most of the Western democracies are getting it right in terms of health care, and the U.S. is far behind, and we're finally making progress on that. I think that there's a sense in which the debate in the U.S. about the danger of dependency in government programs that empower the poor is a good debate. I think that there are some Western democratic societies that probably go a little too far in terms of support in a way that doesn't encourage self-sufficiency. I mean, that's an issue that's significant, but I don't conclude from that government expenditures are wrong, or that we ought to always slash taxes. I like the kind of thing that we do in the U.S. with our grants to poor students from poor families who go to university. There's a substantial grant there, several thousand dollars a year. I think it ought to be higher. Now, that's redistribution, if you will. It's taxing richer people to give poor people a chance to go to college.
But giving them a tool to
exactly
move forward.
Doesn't create dependency. If you don't study for a semester or two, you're out. What it does, it empowers you for a lifetime. Now, that's a kind of model, in my thinking, for the kind of things that I would like government to do. Things that empower poor people, don't create dependency. And we've had a welfare system that really created dependency and destroyed the family. That's crazy. But we ought to be spending money to empower poor people.
And is there something that Christianity today has to offer society in terms of a vision of human flourishing?
Well, I think one of the most basic questions is, who are we? Who are human beings? And you know, for a long, long time, Western culture was quite clear. We were made in the image of God, and therefore, irregardless of our wealth or even mistakes that we've made, we were still persons in the image of God that were to be treated as valuable persons. To a significant extent, Western culture is losing that. It isn't clear to me that we can even maintain for long our commitment to human rights if we don't have a sense that that persons are more than just complex machines. And if, you know, your Australian philosopher who is now in the U.S. At Princeton University,
I think I might know who you mean.
Peter Singer, you know, thinks that we're just complex machines, no different than monkeys and moles, and obviously different in some ways, but not really any more valuable. And to say we're more valuable is to indulge in speciesism. I think that's finally problematic. If persons are not different from the animals and the carrots, then it isn't obvious to me how we have any right to use them in any way, you know, for human civilization. But what's also clear is that Christians, among others, have developed an exaggerated sense of our exclusive importance and have not cared for creation in a way that we're supposed to. The Bible, after all, says in Genesis 2:15 that we're supposed to watch over and care for the earth. And those are strong verbs. They mean serve and be very careful about. That's, you know, what human beings as God's special stewards in the created order are called to do. So I worry about, how society will maintain its commitment to human rights, to the principle of equality, if we lose that fundamental foundation. It's perfectly obvious that people are not equal. You know, we're unequal in color and height and intellectual ability and physical strength. So, you know, where's the basis for this strong commitment to equality in Western culture? It obviously came from historic Christian faith that said every person's in the image of God. It's not obvious that there's any fundamental foundation for continuing to affirm it without that belief.